This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
You sounded good, Rascal.
Well, thank you, sir. I had to live up to your expectations because I know Max was coming on the radio.
We expect a lot of you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
We'll get back to you probably about 5:30, if not before, because we know that when news breaks out, you could break in.
Something's breaking out.
We'll catch you in a few, sir.
You got it.
Thank you. Max Armstrong with you on the Saturday Morning Show, and it's great to be with you this morning to talk about a variety of things. The biggest farm organization of the country just held their meeting. Once they were headquartered here, the American Farm Bureau, for decades headquartered in suburban Park Ridge there along Toohey Avenue. They've been in Washington, D.C. for quite a few years, closer to the seat of power. And that's what that organization does a lot of, is working with Washington. So we'll talk about that more than once here over the next few minutes. We'll have Orion Samuelson checking in with us right after this break. All right, Orion Samuelson joins us indeed this morning from the Valley of the Sun, I think. Big O?
We're joined by 5,000 to 6,000 members of the American Farm Bureau Federation, and they probably didn't get the weather they wanted, particularly if they're from the northern states, because first days of the new year in Phoenix, Arizona have been a little cloudy and a little bit on the cool side, but a lot better than the ice and snow and sub-zero chill wind factors that we have seen across a good part of the country. But the voting delegates at the 98th annual meeting of the American Farm Bureau Federation, including 21 delegates from Illinois, took a look at priority issues. But as I mentioned in Samuelson Says this week, it was a rather unusual Farm Bureau convention. So many topics to be talked about, so much policy to be debated, and so many other agricultural, environmental, immigration programs to be debated. In other words, a lot of questions at the convention, but not many answers. Now, they did a good job of preparing farm policy issues and all of the other issues that they had to discuss. One of the items I noticed that got support of the voting delegates was to keep the food nutrition program, SNAP, to keep that in the farm bill because it continues to give some leverage to agriculture in trading with representatives of consumer advocates when we get to the farm bill. Immigration, of course, an important topic of discussion here in Arizona because Arizona delegates live on the border. They have to live with the people coming across the border at night and destroying property and in some cases killing cattle. And of course, as we learned a couple of years ago, in other cases, killing a rancher who was on the border of Mexico and Arizona. A lot of awards presented at the Farm Bureau Convention. Former President Bob Stallman back this year, not as president. I don't think he was even a delegate, but he was awarded the Distinguished Service Award, the highest award presented by the American Farm Bureau. And Illinois did pretty well in some of the areas of awards. Illinois Farm Bureau Young Leaders took home national awards. Grant and Kristen Strom of Knox County winning the Young Farmer and Rancher Achievement Award program. Not a bad award, really, because they got their choice of either a 2017 Chevrolet Silverado or a 2017 GMC Sierra. And Mark and Sarah Mitchell of Grundy County advanced to the top 10 finalists in that competition. And Lynn Duran of Champaign County advanced to the Sweet 16 in the Young Farmer and Rancher Discussion Meet. Many of the county farm bureaus also received awards for programs in education and outreach, leadership development, member benefits. All of that part of the awards program at the annual convention of the American Farm Bureau. As I mentioned to several people, one of the strangest stories to me in agriculture this week, well, yeah, the record production year that was finally confirmed, but the fact that we're going to begin shipping shell eggs to South Korea because their laying flock is down about a third because of bird flu. And so they have come to the United States and said, can you ship shell eggs? They do that by air freight. And so far they've contracted about four jet freighters to haul 3 to 4 million eggs from the United States to South Korea. Well, we'll be back in the Midwest next week, speaking in Urbandale, Iowa, for the Farm Log People on Tuesday, and then in Champaign on Thursday, speaking for the Farm Log People. We look forward to that. And Max, your job, warm it up a little bit for me. That's our report from the Valley of the Sun.
All right, Big O, thank you much. Appreciate it. I know you enjoyed being with the Farm Bureau members, just as I do, when I have the chance to cover that meeting. And, of course, one thing they were buzzing about, those farm leaders, is the lack of an agriculture secretary designate. We'll talk a little more about that in just a few minutes here. There's much more than that on the minds of farmers as they face this ag economy that we have right now. I sat down this week with a fellow farm broadcaster, Steve Bridge. Covers the agriculture scene so well across central Illinois. He's on the radio at WFMB in Springfield. I asked him what he's hearing producers talk about as he's going out to some of these meetings. Yeah, seed corn company meetings, local soil and water conservation district meetings. Oh, this is the meeting season, what Orion and I have often called the green bean circuit. What's Steve hearing?
Max, I think everybody's curious about what they're going to do on the input side and just being ready and being profitable for 2017. There's, I think, a little bit of growing optimism out there in some places right now just because I think they feel like they've done a lot of the necessary belt tightening, if you will. They've really tried to become a little bit more cognizant of their expenses, so they're kind of ready to see how good
Good a job they can do. I think Steve indicated at cutting expenses, so... Yeah, there are a lot of things that the growers have to take a look at right now and analyze and try to manage. And that's why many of them this next week will be attending something called the Farm Futures Summit. That'll be going on out at Bettendorf, Iowa. Mike Wilson, editor of Farm Futures Magazine, talked with me about it this week. And one thing that they have been doing is bringing ag economists in. They have one coming in from Texas A&M University. They have a highly regarded ag economist, long associated with Virginia Tech, David Cole. And then they also added another economist this week, as Mike pointed out to me when we visited.
That's true, Max. We are really excited about this latest addition. It's Purdue ag economist Mike Bulgey. Many people who have been to the summit before remember that Mike has been one of the great voices for the summit. He's helped a lot of farmers over the years in his career at Purdue and other universities, and he is coming in to speak next week at the summit, which will be held at Bettendorf, Iowa, this year.
One thing I've thought about Mike in the past, and I've been in his audience and on the program with him on many occasions, I've kind of likened him to the canary in the coal mine. I mean, he really sounds the warning when he sees out something out on the horizon. He lets the producers know of trouble ahead, if there is such a thing.
That's absolutely true. I can remember a few years back when Mike was kind of laughing about people talking about a new plateau in grain prices. And, you know, if you could really sustain or if really, really felt like it's worth paying X amount of money for land, if you thought that corn prices were going to be $6 forever. And, of course, they weren't. And he was right all along. So Mike and many of the other economists who are speaking next week, they're generally pretty good at figuring out what's going to be going on in agriculture.
When producers come to the program this year, how do you think they'll be approaching it, Mike? I mean, it's a challenging scenario, to be sure, and there are many things to be concerned about. How worried are they?
Well, you know, that's a double-edged sword, I guess. These days in agriculture, we are hearing two sides of it. Last fall, we heard from ag bankers who were talking about how there was a small group of producers who were probably in danger, having some financial troubles and perhaps having some limitations on their lending situation. I don't think that's going to be the case, though, with many of the people coming to the summit. We did see a lot of people making some really smart strategic moves in marketing last year when we had that grain rally last summer. And a lot of people made money last year despite, general malaise in the grain markets. And I think that there's a lot of farmers who are coming to the summit who are going to have that proactive kind of approach to agriculture. And a lot of them are going to be sitting in the driver's seat when it comes to opportunities that are coming down the road. So I think that they're looking at what kinds of things that they can learn about how to manage their business and, you know, what's going to happen in a positive manner.
It seems like every year holds the prospect for those so-called black swans, and sometimes those can be very bearish scenarios. Sometimes, like in 2016, with that rally in June, they can offer great opportunity. And I would imagine as you sit and listen to these economists, producers might get some good ideas as to potential black swans that could be out there.
That's true, and nobody really does that better than Dr. Dave Cole. He's going to be coming back to the summit. He'll be speaking next Friday, just after Mike Bolgi, actually. And Dr. Cole gives people sort of a 30,000-foot outlook on ag and the global economy, and he is a very popular speaker at the summit. As well, Bryce Knorr, our own senior market analyst, will be there. He's going to be speaking about the grain markets. And Bryce is really good at analyzing what's happening with the grain markets. Clearly, you know, when you talk about black swans, we don't really know, obviously. That's why they call them black swans. You don't know what's going to happen with our new president in terms of grain, trade. So we're going to find out, obviously. But farmers have to be prepared for any scenario, and that's kind of what one of the messages will be next week.
Times in the past, when I've been at this conference, one thing I've noticed is what takes place outside those meeting rooms. And it's fun to watch it as an outside observer, to watch the producers interact in the hallway or in the lobby of the hotel or in the lounge of the facility. And sometimes folks make connections here that tend to be lasting connections, and they can learn from each other.
Well, that's absolutely true. We've been putting on the summit now for 11 years, first 10 years in St. Louis, and this is the first time we'll be going to Bettendorf, Iowa. But I imagine that quite a few people will still be coming back who've been perhaps there since the very beginning. A lot of people tell us they come to meet new people, but also renew old acquaintances. A lot of these guys are business partners now. They've found each other in terms of deals that they can make. Maybe there's a machinery agreement or some other thing. And they are a different set of different kind of producer, in my opinion. They're there to be engaged with the speakers. They're not there just to listen. They're there to be a part of the seminar. And that's something we really encourage.
I've known producers to connect over a distance of 300 miles just to share a piece of equipment, as one grower could try it out and learn from another. There tends to be a sharing crowd, for sure.
That's true. I mean, obviously, agriculture is a competitive business. And as you know as well as I do, you may have a different situation if you have a neighboring farmer, but a lot of these guys are coming from all over the country. In the past, we've seen farmers coming from 23 states, and that's great. A lot of them are willing a little bit more willing to share information with each other.
You talked about some of those producers who really did seize the marketing opportunities in the recent past and have done well because of it. I continue to be amazed, Mike, at the land values that I'm hearing about. Now, prices have slipped in many instances, and yet every now and then you get a report of pure farmland, they would call Class A farmland. Now, it's not at the edge of town, prime for development, but it's a piece of good farmland, productive farmland. A grower from Winnebago County, Illinois, the other day told me about a piece of ground, and he was telling me about the value on that land as it was assessed. I was shocked at some of the value still up there, you know, well north of $10,000 an acre.
Well, it's a shock to me as well, Max. Of course, that area there, I grew up in that area, And while it's not quite influenced by Chicago just yet, it's kind of it's getting there. But I know what you're saying. I think what happens is, again, you have farmers who are still making money. They're making good marketing decisions, and they're profitable, and they're in a neighborhood where they know they can make money on good land. They're going to be in there competing with each other on price. As you know, farmers are the biggest buyers of farmland. And so I think until we see, I really don't know what would have to drive land prices down the way some people have predicted, but I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. I think that there will always be a good market for good land.
We tend to stereotype. No. Let me not lump you into that. Max Armstrong tends to stereotype sometimes, and I think of these progressive producers who would attend a conference of this nature, and I tend to think of individual farmers and farmers and sons. And guess what? That's not accurate, because I've seen spouses and I've seen farmers and daughters at this conference. I've seen women farmland managers in attendance at this conference. It's a very diverse bunch, isn't it?
Absolutely true. And I think that's a great thing about agriculture today. Last couple of years, we've been writing more feature stories about young women who come into the business. Usually it's a father-daughter, or maybe father-daughter and son. And that's great, because as you know, farming is not really all about muscle so much as it's about brain power. You can hire the muscle, I guess you could say, but you have to have the talent and the dedication, the passion, and the intellect to be a great farm manager, and that can be anybody.
Mike Wilson, the editor of Farm Futures Magazine, as we visited about their Farm Futures Summit that is coming up. Yes, Thursday and Friday, 2 days. And there is a website. You can go and get all of the information. And I'm told you can still register online. FarmFuturesSummit.com is where to sign up for that. FarmFuturesSummit.com. Weather-wise, I think we're going to dodge the bullet in the Chicago area here. The ice storm is going to go to the south. That sounds like it's going to be some pretty serious stuff. It's already taking place in areas of Kansas and Missouri. And there'll be a band across central Illinois. It'll be interesting to see how close that gets to Chicago. You know, I was talking to some friends down in Missouri this week, and they said the lines were long at the supermarkets. We worry about having enough bread and milk. And just ask anybody in a supermarket, we probably worry a little too much about it. We always go in there and we stockpile just ahead of the storm. You know what we tend to forget, though? When an ice storm is in the forecast, we tend to forget the need to charge up stuff. Get everything charged. We rely so much on batteries being charged by electricity, and if there's a power outage, which there often will be in an ice storm, and we've disconnected the landline, as many people have done, what do you do then to get communication? Even in the case of an emergency, you're so reliant upon that cell phone that needs to have either an electric line going into it or be charged. And ice storm damage will take those lines down quite often. And they're saying this winter storm Jupiter has the potential for doing that. What was the statistic? I saw an interesting. Well, first of all, I read this week that the heaviest ice accumulation on record was an ice storm 56 years ago this month. Northern Idaho, get this. Now, we're talking about in this storm that's coming through parts of the Midwest, there might be a quarter of an inch, perhaps up to three-quarters of an inch of ice. I'd been reading about that. There was a storm in 1961 in northern Idaho. They had 8 inches of ice. Think about that. What a mess that would be. And every time we lose power in a storm, we hear of a report of somebody forgetting about the danger of carbon monoxide. And they run gas generators or charcoal and propane barbecue grills or kerosene heaters. And if you operate those in an enclosed space, yeah, it can kill. The signs of carbon monoxide poisoning are, nausea, headache, fatigue, and that can, of course, lead to death. So don't operate those things in the garage or in the house. And then every time we have an ice storm, we have a lot of falls. And, if you're 12 years old and you take a tumble, you laugh about it. If it's his granddad, who is 81, who takes a tumble, it can be fatal, of course. So watch your step, bub, out there, and check on each other. That's good guidance this time of the year. You know, we're not as close out on the rural route as we used to be. The generations before us you know, would communicate from one house to another quite often. And then in a storm the other day, I called a neighbor of mine, Johnny. I said, Johnny, this is your nosy neighbor, Max, just checking on you. And he laughed and he thanked me and said, yeah, please be nosy anytime you want to. So, yeah, let's kind of keep an eye on each other a little bit during these winter storms when they come through. We are sure to have more of them, I suspect. There's more coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show on WGN Radio. Well, coming up yet, we'll talk about the fact that there has not been an agriculture secretary named by President-elect Donald Trump, and the fact that the man who has held the job for the past 8 years got on a plane, left Washington. He quit two or three days early. Tom Vilsack said, I'm done. He flew back to be with the family in Iowa, to the surprise of some folks. Oh, there's probably a little too much made of all of that. But anyway, yeah, you know, bloggers and writers and reporters have to write about something. Big O weighs in, brings a little bit of common sense to the nonsense of the world with Samuelson Says, brought to you now by Wink Products.
Wink Products Company has been providing professional strength household cleaners and other problem solvers for nearly 70 years. So when they come up with a new solution, people listen. Wink Lime and Rust Remover dissolves rust and hard water stains, soap scum, and buildup on bathroom sinks, shower doors, tubs, toilets, and tile. It even cleans lime scale off your humidifiers, tea kettles, and cookware. Find a store near you or purchase online at wink.com. That's WHINK.com.
During my many years as a farm broadcaster, I have attended many annual conventions of the American Farm Bureau Federation. But this past week in the Valley of the Sun in Phoenix, Arizona, I attended a very unusual Farm Bureau convention because there were far more questions than answers. A lot of major topics to be discussed, but no conclusions could be reached because we're not quite sure where we'll be under the Trump administration as far as agricultural policy is concerned. And at this convention, yes, the delegates were hammering out farm policy over the next 2 or 3 years, but again, talking to State Farm Bureau presidents, not really knowing what they'll be dealing with from the standpoint of staff and Secretary of Agriculture, the Agriculture Department. What kind of a department will it be under the Trump administration? They talked a good deal about farm policy. They talked about concerns over writing a new farm bill for this coming year and maintaining crop insurance as an important part of the program for the financial security of farmers and ranchers. They talked a great deal about over-regulation of government agencies, particularly the EPA. And immigration? Oh, yes, that was discussed too, because here in Arizona, it's a border state with Mexico. Farm labor is vital to the lettuce bowl in the Imperial Valley of California and Arizona. They talked a lot about immigration. And as they talked about all of these issues, they did formulate policy without really knowing who is going to set the policy. And as one State Farm Bureau president said, we really don't know until we know who the Secretary of Agriculture will be and how much of a strong voice the new secretary will have in the Trump administration. The only other annual Farm Bureau convention more unusual than this one for me, several years ago, the convention in Atlanta, hammered by an ice storm, I wasn't even able to attend. But this one in the Valley of the Sun didn't have that problem, but it had quite a few others. My thoughts on Samuelson Says.
All right, Big O, thanks much. Appreciate it. Let me address that topic of no agriculture secretary appointee yet. And he's gone down the list. President-elect Trump has gone down the list, filling his cabinet. And he has not dealt with that position that is ninth in succession to the White House. I believe it's ninth. that of Agriculture Secretary. And, yeah, we've, I think I saw some statistics this week. I believe only 17 of our states have had an Agriculture Secretary during the years. It represented at USDA by someone from that state, only 17 states. And we've had 30 secretaries of agriculture altogether during the years. And I believe there have been two from Illinois, at least two from Illinois, and at least two from Indiana. Iowa has had the most. I believe they've had five, including the man who just departed that job, Tom Vilsack, who it could be argued, I mean, he was done. What else was there to do? So he packed up his bag and got on a plane this week. And I know some reporters made a big deal out of that. He did, on his way out the door, leave a little bit of a parting shot, complaining. Yeah, he had to get on with everybody else. He complained about the incoming president and the fact that he apparently doesn't think much of the U.S. Department of Agriculture because he hasn't appointed an agriculture secretary yet. All of the press reports say that Donald Trump has been interviewing people, that he has interviewed the former governor of the state of Georgia, Sonny Perdue. In fact, I've heard he interviewed him twice, two times. He's interviewed Elza Morano, a lady from Texas who once ran Texas A&M University for a short period of time. She was at USDA at one time as an undersecretary or deputy secretary, something like that. And he interviewed the former lieutenant governor of the state of California, who's in the wine grape business. And he has interviewed Northern Indiana farmer Kip Thom, who is a genuine farmer, a progressive farmer, a very knowledgeable farmer. He is right out of that Trump successful businessman mode. He ran unsuccessfully for Congress in Northeast Indiana. Kip is over in that Warsaw area. Kosciuszko County. In Chicago, the Polish would say Kosciuszko. In northern Indiana, it's Kosciuszko County. But Kip would be an excellent appointee if he were to get that nod. But nothing has happened yet. And you've got people wringing their hands over it. Okay, who's wringing their hands over this? Who's worried about it? Well, yes, reporters. Mm-hmm. The policy wonks. And the lobbyists, they're worried about it. The ag lobbyists, they're concerned. They want to know who the player is going to be here, who they're going to have to work with, who the staff people will be. So they're wringing their hands about it. The farm leaders are concerned about it. The officials of farm organizations, understandably, they want to know who's going to be in that job. I would maintain that if you drive up and down the rural roads of the Midwest or anywhere in the United States, go down in northern Texas, drive down the roads past Wildorado and some of those places out there on the Texas Plain, go out in Kansas, drive down the rural roads, go across central Illinois, stop at farm homes, ask genuine farmers how worried they are about a lack of an appointee at the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and you'll probably get a shoulder shrug. That might be the reaction, because they think in many instances some of the key issues have already been taken care of with appointees made by Trump. All right? He's appointed his EPA administrator, the guy named Pruitt from Oklahoma, and he's responsible for ethanol policy. They're a little concerned about that, especially in this part of the world where so much of our corn crop gets used for the production of ethanol. He's also responsible for the environment. And that has been one of the biggest issues that farmers have had to face. Environmental regulation and the possibility of this Waters of the United States issue. And this Pruitt guy, clearly farmers perceive, is going to be on their side when it comes to the environment. So that's taken care of. Two very big things. And I've often said the EPA administrator has, in recent years, exerted as much influence over the lives of farmers in the United States as the ag secretary quite often. All right, they're concerned about trade with all of the saber-rattling that Trump did during the campaign about trade and trade retribution. They're concerned about it. There's no doubt about that, especially when you consider the fact that our neighbor just to the south, Mexico, is one of the biggest markets we have for what we have to sell to the world, whether you're talking about corn or pork, dairy products. The Mexican market is huge for us. Farmers would take a beating if that market were to diminish. There's no indication that it will, but just the talk, the kind of trade talk that had come out of Donald Trump during the campaign, had some people concerned. Then there's the other big market that farmers have, the big market for our soybeans, the Chinese market. Yeah, there's some worry about that. But he then appointed the guy who's been governor of Iowa as the ambassador to China, who's had a very, very good schooling, of course, in the concerns of the ag economy. And I think a lot of farmers feel like their interest might be pretty well represented there. Well, what does the agriculture secretary do? I was reading a story in Modern Farmer. I'm not sure what Modern Farmer is. I don't know if anybody who I don't know if it's a magazine or it's a website that popped up. Somebody sent it to me and said, what do you think of this? And this author in Modern Farmer was talking about the, quote, concern out in the countryside about nobody appointed to the ag secretary's post. And he talks about the importance of the U.S. Department of Agriculture with 100,000, some 100,000 employees, and it is important. But let me go down the list of things that he enumerated here that the agency does. It's responsible for keeping American farms afloat and safe, he says. Well, it administers the Farm Bill. That's what the USDA does. The Farm Bill is written on Capitol Hill. It's written by Congress. We have one in place. They'll probably start this year holding hearings on the next one. It's a very important piece of legislation as far as agriculture is concerned. Let there be no mistake about it. The Farm Bill is not written by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. And sometimes the Ag Secretary has very little input in the process, as we've seen. So let's check that one off as being not so significant in the role for farmers keeping farms afloat. They only administer the programs. The Ag Secretary may or may not have much influence. There are the public nutrition programs administered by the Department of Agriculture. Yeah, they're important. SNAP programs, better known as food stamps and school lunches, they are not so important when it comes to the pocketbook of most farmers out on the rural route. They don't get too lathered up about that, even though those nutrition programs account for 80% of the USDA budget. Refinancing home loans, USDA handles that. It's not a big deal to farmers. They might take advantage of that, but it's usually other rural residents who benefit more. Refinancing home loans, rural electrification. Yes, there are loans, typically, or loan guarantees that have come out of the USDA for rural electric cooperatives, but the reality is, in many areas, investor-owned utilities have lines out in the countryside. That's the case in a big chunk of northern Illinois. There are rural electric co-ops, but they're not the only ones involved out there. It is important to maintain that rural infrastructure, to be sure. USDA has a minor role in that. Clean water projects, yeah, that matters in a lot of small towns, but I would hasten to point out most farmers have their own wells out there. Mental health issues, USDA gets involved in those? Well, this author points that out, and mental health issues are a concern just as much as they are in all of society. They are with farmers, and especially during challenging times in the farm economy. I would suggest to you that's a minor concern that farmers have as far as the USDA role. And fighting opioid addictions, this author mentions as a role for the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It hasn't been very long. Just last year, when Tom Vilsack was complaining about not having enough to do at USDA and thinking he would quit early and bail out of the Obama cabinet after 7 years, the president came to him and said, we have this rural drug problem. Would you oversee that? And as Vilsack said in an interview with Orion, it was something that he was ready to embrace because he had seen addiction in his mother when he was very young. So that was a role that Tom Vilsack took on, again, not perceived as a major issue for farmers as far as USDA is concerned. Absolutely, they worry about the drug problem in rural areas. And it's just as serious there, if not more so, than it is in the cities. So when you look at all of these things that this author assigned to the USDA as being big areas of concern for farmers, the bottom line is they're not a big concern for many farmers in our part of the country. Those concerns are being taken care of by other agencies, other appointees, or they are things that are outside of the control of the Secretary of Agriculture. What is so important about the Ag Secretary? That he uses bully pulpit. That whoever he or she is in that role use that as a bully pulpit for talking about the important issues of food and agriculture, the science that is necessary for farmers to continue to amp up the production to feed the huge, growing, dramatically growing population of the world. That's probably the most important role the Ag Secretary has, and working up on Capitol Hill to help shape the Farm Bill and to make lawmakers know what's necessary to administer that Farm Bill, as his agency will indeed have the important role of administering it. So, yeah, there's not so much hand-wringing among actual working farmers about the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I think they figure perhaps in due time that'll be taken care of. They are interested in seeing who gets the nod, and I think they'd love to see someone who could be a superb spokesman for them. The American Farm Bureau president talked with Orion about a number of issues. Orion referred to this earlier. Zippy Duvall, the president of the Farm Bureau, who sat and talked with Orion a little bit during that meeting. We wanted to share a little bit of that visit with you this morning.
You've had an interesting year. What are you most happy about in your first year as Farm Bureau?
Well, I'm really excited to have had the opportunity to go across this country and see agriculture in every region and educate myself, because I fully believe that to be a good president in this position, you got to understand the issues on the land where it's happening. So I've been to 33 states since January, and I've visited farmers out on their place, and I've heard them see the anger in their cheeks when they talk about overregulation. I've seen tears in the eyes when I seen land grabs by the federal government, and I've just seen all the expressions that go along with people and their private property rights and their ownership of their land and how proud they are of it, but how frustrated they are too.
Well, now we're going to be plowing a new field with a new administration in Washington, and agriculture has a lot of items on the table to be looking at, starting with the Farm Bill. Where are we at Farm Bureau on the Farm Bill?
Well, we're real excited about the process that we went through this last year. We brought together a working group of Farm Bureau employees who had been listening back to our grassroots of farmers out there. And they came together and discussed what they'd been hearing from the grassroots, put together over 50 working white papers, and several videos that we posted on our website. And we did that, Orin, to be able to generate a landscape out in our countryside for our farmers to view and start thinking about the process. What do we need to do with our policy so that we're ready for that discussion? So Tuesday of this convention, our delegates will vote on our policy around Farm Bill. I'm real excited about what they're going to come out with, and I think we'll probably be more prepared to have a conversation about how to either write a new Farm Bill or repair the one we have for the new Farm Bill so that we can have a better safety net for all of agriculture across America. We're very prepared, and we're very ready for that conversation.
Is the insurance program an important ingredient in the Farm Bill?
It most certainly is. You know, and one of the things we've got to do is continue to bring awareness to how important it is. It's such a main part of the safety net, and to make sure that the federal government and congressmen and senators continue to support that financially, that we can keep that as a part of our safety net.
We hear the term over-regulation a great deal. Is that on your concern list?
It's you know, as I traveled the country to those 33 states, just depending on what kind of farm you went to, you either heard over-regulation or farm labor. Two biggest issues facing agriculture today, outside of the economy that we are going through, of course.
The immigration situation, the public doesn't realize how much of the food gets to their table because of the program with immigration labor.
Exactly right. You know, probably 60-70% of the people that are working in our fields, they are considered undocumented. A lot of them have been here decades, have families, they're ingrained in our communities. In our policy, what we would like to see is we need a workable, flexible program that small, large, and immediate-sized farms can deal with without having to hire lawyers or have an HR department. And then, of course, we need to have a way to adjust the status of those workers that's been on our farms for so many years. They've been in our communities. They're law-abiding people. Of course, someone would might say, well, they broke the law coming here. Well, a lot of us have broke laws. A lot of us may have paid some fines for something. Then let's, as businessmen, figure out how they pay for breaking that law and find some status for them to stay here and work. They just want to work to make a life for their family.
Zippy Duvall, president of the American Farm Bureau, again addressing another topic that really, really matters to farmers, immigration policy, but it's one that is not under the purview of the United States Secretary of Agriculture. Here's one other thing I didn't talk about in terms of the Ag Secretary and a matter that really matters to farmers, health care. They are amped up about the possibility of seeing some change in our health care system. Because it is so costly. I was visiting with a young farmer the other day, and this fellow was out near the Mississippi River. And he was, in fact, Steve Bridge, my farm broadcast colleague, and I were talking about it also. And there were some numbers being bandied about what it was costing farmers to insure their families now. And it is not at all unusual to find a farm family that is spending somewhere in the neighborhood of $25,000, $30,000 a year to insure the family, to cover the medical insurance of the farm family. It's devastating, the cost is. And so, again, this is something that has nothing at all to do with the appointment of an agriculture secretary. Yet farmers think that it's going to get taken care of. And that's why they're optimistic. That's why they're not so against the fact that there isn't an ag secretary yet. And are optimistic? Are they? Absolutely. There have been two surveys that have come out in the past 3 weeks, one done by DTN, and then there was the Purdue CME survey that came out a few days ago. They survey producer sentiment, how farmers feel about their situation and how they feel about the future. And since the middle part of November, now the way farmers feel about their current situation hasn't really changed. They look at the current situation as not very bright. But the way they feel about the future, their sentiment on that shot up like a rocket. The biggest increase in both of these surveys, the biggest increase in the history of the time they've been doing these surveys. So clearly, there's a lot of optimism. Whether or not it is rightly placed could be debated. But there is a lot of optimism among farmers who, according to another survey ahead of the election, favored the election of Donald Trump by 7-1. In regard to their preference over Hillary Clinton. So time will tell if that is well-placed confidence, but at least that's where we stand at the moment. I was reading an interesting article this week about the supermarket and about how much we spend at the supermarket, and we're going to continue to be spending more. The Food Marketing Institute says shoppers last year spent an average of $107 a week on groceries. $107 a week. That was in 2016. The year before, we spent $101. 5 years ago, we spent $97. So you better believe it, it's going up. It went up $10 in just 5 years, what we're spending at the supermarket. But now let me hasten to point out, we've had widespread deflation in food prices. So as the Food Marketing Institute points out, the increases are being driven either by shoppers putting more items in their baskets, more non-food items, or they're trading up to pricier products. And the Food Marketing Institute says it's probably a combination of the two, what's going on in our supermarket spending. There's more coming up here on the Saturday Morning Show. Thank you so much for being with us here on the Saturday Morning Show from WGN Radio. On behalf of Orion Samuelson, Max Armstrong, expressing appreciation for the time we've had to visit. And thanks to Bob Ferguson for the fine job he's done in helping keep us on the air over the past hour. Hey, Mike, Stephen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir. I'm doing okay. You know, something you were talking about with the grocery store, the average, how much we pay. I mean, it's incredible. Now, granted, I've got my little guy, you know, running around. He's almost two. But we go above what it was like $107 was the average
exactly.
in the supermarket.
Yeah.
We're a family of three. We're definitely above that, but it is every week.
Now, here's a question.
Yeah.
Do you do the shopping, or does that beautiful bride of yours do the shopping, or
well,
do you share the responsibilities?
You know what? These days, daddy's in charge of the shopping.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Six out of 10 households now identify themselves as co-shopper households.
Really?
Dividing and conquering that job, according to the Food Marketing Institute survey.
You know what? I feel like she's a great mommy. She does a lot. The least I could do is go to get some milk and eggs and everything that we need at the grocery store.
Now, here's the interesting question.
Uh-huh.
Is that tally, when you get to the checkout lane, higher when you handle that job, or would it than it would be if she were doing the shopping?
You know what? Here's why I think it is, because I'm just like, I'm not quite sure if I'm supposed to get this. You know, let's just get the whole thing. Let's just get this, pull this off the shelf. Let's put it all in the cart, because that way, when I come home, I can't get in trouble for getting the wrong stuff.
There you go.
You know? So, hey, always a pleasure to talk to you, Max.
Good talking to you, sir. We look forward to listening to you.
All right, thanks. Have a great day. That's Max Armstrong.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.